Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Check 1, 2. All right, friends. Good to be here. Nice to be seen. My name is Dean. And here we go. Busy day today. Busy day one guest. Lachlan's still at his yoga retreat. He'll be back next week. He's somewhere in the Joshua Tree right now, sweating it off. Sweating off 30 years of alcohol. That's what you do when you get better. You jump in with both feet. That's what Lachlan's doing as he's exploring the new part of his life. Welcome to the program. My name is Dean, as always, brought to you by our friends at Fact Check. Go to factcheck.io to sign up for their beta test to kill disinformation with them, full epistemology, social media, any URL, any picture, any video. Join their beta test. Become a verified fact checker at factcheck.io. Also brought to you by Muse on the Mic, redefining provocative massage. Go to museonthemic.com, Muse on the Mic Patreon. Subscribe to their new Patreon show as well. It's clinical educators and advocates for the sex work industry. And of course, CanTorque, brought to you by CanTorque.com. Makers of rugged, hardworking torque wrenches out of Edmonton, Alberta, Canada. Proudly Canadian made for any bolting solution worldwide. All right. Listen, sometimes there are things that happen in our world. This might come as a shock that I'm not qualified to talk about. Medical stuff, psychological stuff, internet stuff. Now, you combine all those things together and you have really what the currency of our current society is all about, which is like, you know, how can you convince people that something is good or bad for them because it might be good or bad for the fortunes of your group or your political party, et cetera, et cetera. And we're seeing that more and more. And we're also seeing the abuse of that more and more. And joining us to talk about internet abuse, social media education, I brought in an expert famous for his TED Talks, famous for his company called Mediated Reality, where he educates people on the good and bad parts of social media, as we all know, across Canada. Everybody's playing the blame game in education, trying to tell everybody it's the social media networks that are screwing up our kids, not us. Let's take away their cell phones. And they did that in Ontario. They're doing that in British Columbia as well. Ontario, where I live, just passed the cell phone ban bill, which says, kids, we're going to take away your phone if you're using it in class. Now, you can't put the genie in the bottle, or maybe you can, but joining us to discuss those things and more from Mediated Reality, social media educator and expert, Jesse Miller is back. From his home office. Nice to see you.
Thank you for having me, Dean.
Sharp in that cardigan. Is it a pullover or a cardigan?
That's a cardigan. I very much appreciate my cardigans.
I'm a cardigan guy too, but like when I talk to people about the difference between the cardigan and the pullover, no one seems to have a great answer for me. Like I'm a big cardigan guy where it's got to have the big collar. Yeah. A pullover or a sweater doesn't have the collar. That's what defines a cardigan versus a sweater, if you ask me.
Yeah, I lean into the hoodie when I'm going for a run or working out. It makes me feel like I'm in Rocky. It's a nice, a good connection. You know, that piece of like just feeling bunched up here. But the cardigan is middle ground. My office too. I try not to heat it because I care about money. And if I can wear a couple layers in here and then choose to discard, it works out okay.
So, you know what?
It looks good. It looks good. It makes me look smarter than I am.
Yeah, no, the cardigan always adds like 20 extra perceptive IQ points. Like the people that you're talking to, right? Exactly. Like, but you like you're here because you're actually smart. Like you don't even need the cardigan today.
You know, it's funny. We do this measurement of like, if you have a degree or if you went to med school, somebody always had to graduate just on the cusp of passing. I've been able to get a couple degrees, do a couple things, but I learn more about life by having conversations. And sometimes you just have to put yourself in somebody else's position or see their viewpoint, which again, our society is entirely missing these days because we're so polarized and we're so angry about just the idea of somebody else on the other side existing as opposed to maybe seeing their point of view. But I've got a couple of things to share once in a while when it comes to talking about smarts. And here's where we're going to go today.
Yeah, I got before we get to the cell phone ban, before we get to kids and social media, blocking social media apps, et cetera, it's now all the rage. Ontario plans on doing this. You've been very outspoken against Stephen Lecce and the Ford government's inability to understand this, and also lies in communicating the evidence. Which evidence are you citing? We'll get to that in just a second. I want to make a pit stop before we do that, though, as a social media educator. And I'm torn. I'm torn when it comes to some content. And there is a meme going around related to hockey. Leafs, Boston. Boston's up 3-1. It's a perennial thing to lose to the Boston Bruins in the first round of the Stanley Cup playoffs here. You know, and there's a bunch of guys that like to have fun with it, guys and girls. One of the groups of people who are currently under fire because they were trying to have fun with this, Spittin' Chicklets, guy named Ryan Whitney. I've spoken to him, interviewed him several times. Fun guy, great product. Spittin' Chicklets is a huge, huge, huge podcast. I think it's the biggest in North America, if I'm not mistaken, which is weird because it's a hockey podcast, so they deserve credit there. But Ryan Whitney put out this meme that he is getting dragged for. You had some thoughts. Leafs fans, I feel for you guys. This ain't right. It's a bear wearing a Bruins outfit, what appears to be sexually assaulting Carlton the Bear, who's a polar bear. It's a meme joke meant to say, hey, Boston is effing Toronto yet again. And I've seen, you know, it's weird because, like, sometimes I look for overreaction, and I can't tell in this situation if it's overreaction, and I know you've been outspoken about it. I know Spittin' Chicklets and Barstool does not have a great reputation when it comes to misogyny. So where do you think this lands? Like, what are your thoughts?
So we can agree that the podcast itself makes its money based on engaging content, right? Sure. And whether that in content we deem it to be offensive or not, it's subjective to the audience. But if I choose to subscribe to Barstool, I'm choosing to receive my sports journalism, my sports commentary from a source that probably isn't leaning heavily into let's talk about why sex assault is an issue in sports, or let's talk about why we shouldn't be portraying items in sports as sex assault. Now, I've listened to a number of episodes of Spit and Chicklets because despite some of the things I might not agree with, they do discuss hockey. And if I'm a hockey fan, I want to know more about the sport I'm interested in. And so if I subscribe to, let's say, 32 Thoughts, the podcast, I'm going for more of a conservative, not diving into the hyper dramatic pieces of hockey, but more of the pragmatic, having good relationships, discussing the game, and then talking about Spit Chicklets is the extremes. But they do have interviews that give you insight to the game itself. And sometimes those interviews show you what a player actually is like after retirement. It gives you a bit more of that unfiltered, you know, not as much of the team PR. And so they are going to make their success based on extremism. And that extremism is, we've got memes and we're going to share them. And they literally have accounts dedicated to that because that's where their content production takes them. So yes, we can say that sex assault is not funny, and an individual portraying that commentary should be held to account. But if they have subscribers who think it is, well, then that might just be the culture of their audience. And that goes to the larger scope of it, of is hockey culture toxic? What steps are being taken to address this issue? But if you have coaches who are sharing these memes with minor players and the minor players are thinking that this is funny, well, then you have a problem, because all the efforts that go into really kind of addressing the issues of actual sex assault in hockey are going to go to places where somebody goes, well, yeah, I'm not going to do that, until, of course, they're presented with making a choice. And we do know that currently that 5 hockey players, a number of whom are prominent in the NHL, are facing the consequences of those behaviors where they think their entitlement never actually would put them in a position of facing consequence for action.
The 2018 Team Canada stuff you're talking about. Yeah.
And again, Spittin' Chicklets has had individuals on the show who have said racist things, have said misogynistic things. No one's calling them out because the individuals who are prone to seeing or hearing it and calling it out aren't listening to the podcast. It's when Ryan Whitney chooses to share it in a more public arena, like on X Twitter, where then hockey community or commentators are then saying, this may have crossed the line. It might not cross the line if you're subscribing to watching their content on Instagram, but if you're not subscribing, it's being shared open and wildly, that's where the dialogue then shifts. Again, for one person it's offensive, for another it's not. But as a whole, can we agree that sex assault is something that's serious in our community? It's a serious issue in hockey culture, 100%. So where does he, as a person involved in hockey, have a responsibility to dismiss it? I'll just point this out. Ryan Whitney is a former player. He makes his success in Barstool community, but he currently has 2 children, both who are boys. odds are if he has a third child and if that child is a female, within 5 to 10 years, he'll be the first person saying something like that is offensive, because as a father, he's one of those individuals who, as a father of a daughter, has to become a father of a daughter to really see that this can be problematic. Just a hard line that's evident in the culture that he's participating in.
So take me down that road of people that will say, stay away from Ryan, stay away from that content. We're allowed to do that. It's the freedom of human expression. It's all those other things. It's woke bullshit. And I'm of the opinion that values come into play here. This is when you see people's values, right? When you go, okay, well, listen, they put that out. That means they're okay with portraying sex assault, because this is part of the narrative. They're okay with portraying sex assault in a joke, and they are not just unfamiliar, but they don't give a shit about anybody who might have seen that in the public square who has been a victim of sex assault, SA as they call it.
Yeah. And just as a quick note, Dean, like we have these individuals, Carter Hart from the Flyer, from the Philadelphia Flyers, mm-hmm. who is one of the individuals from the 2018 team. If you saw his direct messages with his buddies and you were able to put that into a public space, you would say, okay, maybe this person shouldn't have ever been given the opportunity to play in the NHL, because the league or the team would say this person's character isn't something that we should put our marketing dollars behind.
Yeah.
We saw the same thing with Logan Mailloux when he was drafted by the Montreal Canadiens. As a young person, he had been involved in something where he had shared intimate images of a person without their consent.
Yeah.
He was held to a different judicial system because he was playing in Europe. But when he was drafted by the Canadiens, he was trying to do things to distance himself by saying, don't draft me. I'm not ready for this. I've gone through something and there's a lot of baggage attached to me. Now, when the NHL has approved his ability to play this year, there are still people saying that because he's been given this opportunity, he really hasn't gone through a process of rehabilitation. But mm-hmm. the thing is that at some point, we do have to say, okay, individuals can grow and become better despite the mistakes in their life or despite the choices they made that negatively hurt people. Ryan Whitney is still a person who profits off of this idea of sharing something that depicts sexual assault. He's saying, buy my liquor, listen to my podcast, right? He's not a junior hockey player who's saying, please forgive me for doing something years and years ago. So yeah. Within that space, there are obviously responsibilities when it comes to addressing it. Now, there are going to be people on both sides of it who are extreme and say, this person should be given an opportunity. This is infringing on my freedoms, and this is my choice to make art or whatever it be. And again, valid conversations in each space. But overall, Whitney is profiting from this. And so, yes, he's never been a victim of sexual assault, as far as I know. He doesn't have it directly attached to his family. If he did, he might be a little less inclined to lean into the bear assaulting bear narrative.
Bear assaulting bear narrative. But that's what it's been diminutized as, right? Like the people that are pro that kind of content are like, hey, listen, it's a cartoon bear and another cartoon bear. Like no bears were hurt in that capacity. And then they'll look at that and say, listen, my right to be able to put that kind of content out, if I can't, to your point, it impinges on my ability to make money because that's who I'm catering to an audience, right? It's that whole go woke, go broke bullshit that everybody talks about that they literally hold that up as an excuse. And listen, I'm in this space. You're in this space. You know that people are heavily rewarded for that kind of content because attention's attention, right? So, and is there something to be said? And I'm just trying to play DA here. I'm just devil's advocate because I'm a fan of being allowed to be able to do content. I am not a fan of going beyond my own values and virtues where I'm hurting entire groups of people or like triggering PTSD in individuals, which is why we don't do that kind of content. However, we do reserve the right to be able to say, hey, listen, we're going to put something out where, like, I put out a video the other day of a goose. It was just this weird video of a goose flying around a baseball stadium, flies right into the scoreboard and falls down. And the only thing was wait for it. I had people come from out behind the couch and the curtains trying to tell me that I was mean to animals and stuff. And I'm like, whoa, 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 whoa. Yeah. My right to be able to put that out, it meets at the intersection of you being uncomfortable with it. And there's no way that I can go out there and go, okay, hey, everybody, trigger warning if you like geese specifically, if you're a member of PETA, or if you're this. Sexual assault being incredibly different, obviously, but that is not, and I'm just, again, devil's advocate, that wasn't real, right? That was a cartoon version of, you know, something else, to your point. You know, where do people have to be okay with that, or do they, right?
Well, And that's the thing within Canada, we have actual laws that stop artistic content from going into places that are already deemed to be offensive. And then just as an extreme, if we have laws around child pornography in Canada in the sense of possession or production or distribution of it, we also have laws when it comes to obscenity. And if you have content that is stylized or drawn as child pornography, that content itself can also be deemed to be illegal depending on the circumstances of how it's being used. And so when we look at the nuance of this, and let's just go back to Spit and Chicklets for a second, they have had guests who have made anti-Semitic comments about ownership of hockey teams. And they didn't necessarily censor any of that because they didn't pick up on it. They weren't smart enough to see where the guest was making commentary that way. But then once it went public and then they realized, they went back and edited it and said, oh, our podcast has been adjusted for this purpose because we didn't realize. That big gap there of we didn't realize is the issue with any, most Barstool content, is that it has to be extreme enough for the money to be impacted. And let's just say right here that Ryan Whitney's commentary then affected his ability to sell alcohol through New Amsterdam or have it as an associate to the NHL. That would then have an apology kind of put out saying, I wasn't aware, I didn't know, I thought it was a funny image based on comics as opposed to where I didn't see this. That's where the corrective part needs to actually exist. Paul Bissonnette, who's another host of that show, he's been active in calling out NHL players who went after him as a junior player, who targeted him based on being biracial or having ethnicity that was different than, let's say, the everyday white kid playing hockey. Mm-hmm. But in that space, he's also very active making sexualized commentary and sex assault commentary when it comes to bending players over the bench. So within that, unless he's a victim of something, he's not prone to putting himself out there to learn more. Now, I'll give Bissonnette a little bit of props in the sense that he has evolved in a space where now as a media personality, he's much better than when he was a player, just saying whatever asinine thought hopped into his head onto the internet. But that's because he's been chastised and recognized that his ability to make money after hockey will be directly affected if he continues with the misogynistic, hypersexualized content that he put onto the internet 10 years ago.
Well, and that's the thing that, but Jesse, that's the thing that I find so fascinating is that a lot of these guys get really smart when it affects their bottom line, right? Like that's when these guys go, oh, okay, maybe I stepped over line. So for people like that, it's never about values or virtues. It's never about doing the right thing. And I'm trying to figure out if that putting out that meme is the wrong thing, right? And that's, you know, and it is the wrong thing if it touches the money. And when it touches the money, that's because people all complain en masse, which is now like a strategy in this space. So like, case in point, I get a tweet today from somebody and the tweet is titled Hitler the Jew. That's literally what it was titled. That was the person in the tweet. Okay. And it was pictures of Justin Trudeau in drag, Justin Trudeau in blackface, you know, all that stuff. And that was in response to a completely innocuous tweet. That was like, you know, something to do with, hey, good morning, everybody. So I know as a hypothetical, an extreme hypothetical, that's bad. Right? Like those are bad things. Something like this that used to be comedy, which is also, in my opinion, according to my values, like the tweet about Hitler, that everybody universally can say that that's bad, right? You can say that that's a terrible thing to put out into the universe. It's awful thing to think to represent that kind of hatred as a joke, because that's not a fucking joke. This was supposed to be a joke that went completely sideways. And you know, I come from that weird time where it's like that used to be a joke. I understand that it's something that I wouldn't put out because it does depict sexual assault. And my job is to not make anybody's day unwittingly way worse, right? That's what I really do believe my job is to stay away from certain things, certain subjects. But I do it out of self-preservation as well, which also makes you go, well, what am I doing? Am I giving my ability to crack a joke back at somebody when I can't actually express myself? Yeah, and then again, that sits in values, does it not?
It does, but in the values also, and that goes to that point of Whitney, he posted something where the Toronto Maple Leaf Bear is feminized. There's a purse, there's a skirt. It directly implies that the sex assault is towards a female woman, on the way that hockey culture is structured. And unfortunately, in this dialogue of where things are. That's reflective of toxic hockey culture. If it was a masculine bear, right, we would be having a conversation around homophobia in hockey, and when we're talking about making space in the sense of talking about pride and where that exists in hockey. But the reality of it is that there are very good sports reporters, male and female, who are addressing this issue as a whole. Now, we have seen reporters stand up against Barstool. We've seen reporters, even to their own negative experiences, use their platforms. We saw
Gord Miller.
At TSN do the same thing and say, this is the reason that I'm concerned. And you can see there, you're actually sharing a great tweet. That's from Samantha Chang. She's a hockey enthusiast who also has a podcast, a very feminine hockey podcast that approaches these issues and says, you know, these are the things that exist in hockey for women. If you're not talking about them, you're not aware about them, your ignorance is part of the problem. But with Gord Miller here, this becomes this idea of talking about why we see these mainstream reporters choose not to bring up these issues. So I would love to see Elliot Friedman stand up against some of this. I would love to see Friedman say something like, I've been on Spit and Chicklets in the past 6 months. I've been there doing a live broadcast with them, and I don't agree with what Ryan Whitney is sharing here. The more we have that dialogue, we have people holding accountable, you can meet middle ground and say, yeah, you made a mistake, let's move forward, or you made a choice that wasn't reflective of what you could have known about this before you hit post.
Not a lot of courage there when it comes to being able to speak up. And I appreciate what Gord did. And he was challenged as a soy boy. He actually left Twitter for a number of months after he said, hey, listen, I don't like the way that they do business. And then, you know, and then he got hammered, like absolutely hammered, people calling him gay. Like it was just over and over and over again, to the point where I was like, what are you doing, people? Like, that's one of the most celebrated broadcasters, one of the most bulletproof individuals this country has to offer. And he's like, hey, listen, I didn't like that, and here's why. And he took bullets, dude.
Yeah. And again, he had Portnoy all the way at the top going after him, saying, you know, you're not of value. Thing is that that's where there is a lot of toxicity in Barstool culture, in the sense that my perception of the way a sport should be played or done is the only value. And again, you know, the same exists in all spaces. Like I do this joke about video games and esports being included in the Olympics at some point. People will say that's not a sport. To me, is shot put, is javelin, you can throw a spear further than another human being, does that give you value?
BMX, ballroom dancing? No.
But who am I to degrade that, as opposed to what is going to make people want to participate, watch? Yeah. And again, what's the money value, right? We have more people who obviously tune in for a 10-second race in the Olympics than we do for something that is going to go on for hours in the sense of running, because we want the excitement. So if you sell out a stadium, if esports can sell out a stadium and make millions of dollars, how do we not value that as something in our economy that we could subscribe to and participate in as equally as 10 people tossing a basketball around?
Good thoughts. And it, you know, it's the value thing in what we decide is best for us, and trying to tell people, you know, it's best for them. You saw a couple examples of it. British Columbia recently did this. Here in Ontario, we saw this, and I'm really happy that you're here for this conversation, because this is what you do. Jesse Miller, he's a social media expert. He owns a company called Mediated Reality. If you want to tag him in to help you understand your school or your school board, how you're going to manage these things, because they're being managed for them. Big announcement: Ontario planned on getting rid of cell phones in schools. Let me just kind of get to some of the details. Sunday, Stephen Lecce, the education minister, I laugh because he's not really an education minister, announced new rules for vaping and cell phones introduced to schools across the province. During the academic year, when it starts in 25, new policies will order phones into silent mode out of view of school during school hours. Teachers will also be told to confiscate vape products from students caught using them and to immediately notify their parents. We've heard loud and clear from parents and teachers alike that cell phones in classrooms are distracting kids from learning. Now, we're a good 10, 12 years into this experiment. I'm of the big opinion that, you know, there's a couple things you can't do with kids. One of them is change the rules midstream when it comes to how they cope and what they do, specifically if they're not doing anything wrong. We live in a screen era. My youngest is graduating in the 12th grade this year. He thinks it's a joke. It's not something I'm going to have to worry about. But let's get to it. From your perspective, is this even possible, if it is even a good idea for children and parents at this point, to start taking phones away from kids in school?
All right, so this is obviously multi-tiered. First and foremost, the ban already exists in Ontario. It was introduced in 2019. It wasn't effective as a ban. And that's where the word ban really does play a role, because regulation, yes, 100%. But again, what does introducing a ban versus regulation look like? How do people respond to it? And the language is what's so important here, because I'm in British Columbia. We have an NDP government. You're in Ontario. You have a Conservative government. We're hearing the same language when it comes to...
Are they doing that in BC too, Jesse?
Yeah. So, and interestingly enough, you know, we're in a politics season as well. So we have the BC United, which used to be BC Liberals, which are a little bit more conservative leaning compared to, let's say, federal Liberals. They introduced, we're going to make banning cell phones a voting issue for the next election. And then a week later, the BC NDP announced, we're banning cell phones next year, basically bell to bell. And that's the same kind of thing that we're hearing in Ontario, where it's, you know, for the purpose of distraction and academics and getting kids to focus, we're banning cell phones. Now, here's the thing. Cell phone bans traditionally don't work, but we have school districts across Canada who have their own policies in place. And in 2019, when Ontario banned cell phones, basically what they did is saying phones are banned, but we're letting the school districts make a choice about how that gets kind of played out and enforced. But I hate going into schools, and I go to a lot of schools. I've presented in every school district in British Columbia. I've presented in Toronto School District, Toronto Catholic. I've been everywhere. I hate going into a school where you see some IKEA shelf being used to hold $6,000 worth of phones for 80 minutes of school instruction. It doesn't give teachers any form of control in the classroom other than saying, I'm taking the device away. Now, just as a quick note, get this out of schools and put this into our adult world. Can you imagine going into a workplace where you have to check your phone in because your employer can't trust you with your own personal device? Thing is, in some workplaces, that might actually be something that you have to explore, whether it's sensitive data, whether it's top security, national security, things like that.
Have you had to do that? Have you had to give people your phone to go in a meeting? I have.
I've been in situations where government conversations are happening. You have to check your phone because you're going into a secure space.
I've had to put my phone in a Faraday box
going
into meetings, which blocks all signals around your phone. And I'll tell you, when the guy says, "Can I have your phone, please?" Right?
Yeah.
I'm like this. I don't think so.
Yeah. And then that becomes a question of your work versus your personal. And the thing is that in any workplace where we're being dictated how we use our personal device, we would have pushback. And again, especially if it's a union shop. But now let's pivot that to texting and driving. If you are a person who caught texting and driving, and instead of getting a ticket, the officer says, "Well, we can't trust you with this because you're distracted. So let's hand it over." And it goes into a bag and it's sealed for 24 hours and you get it back when you show that you could be more responsible. We would have so many court cases talking about privacy rights violations, infringement of possession of personal property by law enforcement. And so it's so unique that schools become this place where teachers now become not only the educator, but the cop, but the extension of the arm of enforcement for the principal. And what's the end goal? Because academics are not going to improve. Focus is not going to improve. Distraction is not going to become mitigated. Kids use these tools for a variety of reasons. And yes, you can police the individual, but doing it as a whole means that you're saying that all the issues equally are affecting each kid. And that's not true. There's no evidence to prove that social media itself is a direct corollary between mental health issues in young people. There's no proof to show that the cell phone is a distraction that stops the child from matriculating to any form of level of mathematics or history or social studies that is going to stop them from being an effective learner in post-secondary. And I teach in post-secondary. I couldn't imagine the responsibility of coming to a classroom and telling all my students to put away their personal technology because the time we have is valuable. And they're
let me ask you a question. Like, you know, in the big scheme of things, you're an educator, right? Mm-hmm. They're asking you to now not just educate, but to, as you point out, to police these children. And in Ontario, they're telling teachers, not only do you have to take their phones from them, you yourself as a teacher have to set that example, and you're going to have to take your phone and put it in the same box.
And I love the idea that is held to a standard. Now, here's the thing. Let's say, despite my feelings around him as a minister of education. There are a couple things in this that are good. One, we're going to focus more on digital citizenship. We're going to be talking about media literacies as part of a core curriculum piece. You're going to see conversations around healthy use, right? That healthy use piece is huge because from the grade 8 to 12 year, if we're not introducing healthy use as opposed to a ban, that young person in the workplace, that young person in a school environment, post-secondary learning environment, is not going to be effective in learning how to use this tool as a complement to their day, as a tool to function and using it to not only schedule personal events and professional development, but also just where they can choose to put it down. Like that choice to put it down has to be something that they've developed.
Yeah. That comes with that's a skill, right? That's moderation. That's not something like it's an addictive process. It's the same as drinking, same as anything else. If you introduce healthy or habits, and if they see healthy people using these things, like it's like anything that you model as a parent, right? Which is another whole piece to this, you know, where you get the nanny state coming in going, okay, we got to manage your kids' cell phones. And now we'll get to the distraction portion in just a second.
Yeah.
But to your point, you know, when we want to teach people how to be responsible, that is something that comes over time. And it's not something a lot of parents are investing in their kids, Jesse, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And again, they're not leading by example in that space. The same parent who's kvetching about their kid being on the device playing a video game or texting people, that within 5 minutes, the parents do the same thing. Look, I did my master's research on how children could organically choose to put down technology. And I interviewed students who would have their phones taken away by teachers and ask them questions like, is it the curriculum? Is it the engagement? Is it lack of respect for the educator? And they would say, no, I have it with me. And I understand that if we take it away,
hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
Mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Then yes, they may be more engaged. But again, that contrast of me as a kid in the 80s and early 90s, I wasn't more engaged because I didn't have my phone with me. It didn't exist. I would sit there and doodle. It was about my learning and the way that I perceive learning. But if you ask a hockey kid, let's go back hockey.
Okay.
Have you ever had a coach yell at you?
Yeah, of course. Yes.
Why have you had a coach yell at you? I don't know. I wasn't doing something right. So they yelled at me. They swore. It was fine. I got over it. But the thing is that if you ever ask that kid, have you ever played a game of hockey with a cell phone in your hand? No, that's stupid. Why would I do that? I'm going to fail my team. I'm going to fail myself. I'm going to damage my phone. Like, that kid, the idea of having that phone in that space doesn't exist because there is no capacity to use it in that space. But now we're watching NHL games where the second the players get to the bench, they're being handed iPads to look at their data in real time. They're low jacked with tracking devices to show them their kinesiology, their sports medicine in real time. There is a hybrid of tech and sport that basically equates to success in some level. So if we can't do the same thing in our schools using technology that kids bring into the school so that when they go home, they can do homework because not every kid is privileged to have a computer. Oh my goodness, Dean. Like, how is it that a ban makes this effective in learning?
It doesn't.
They also argue making kids better at face-to-face communication. Some kids don't do well with face-to-face communication, not because they don't like to communicate, but because the other kids they talk to are assholes to them. They treat them poorly. They are bullies. They ostracize them because that kid is different. But those kids who play in online communities and find people with the same life interests or wants to do something, they can find their best friend literally hundreds of kilometers away because that kid found a like-minded
community. He found some identity, some community. Yeah. You're going to remove that from them as well. The piece that I'm really interested in too, Jesse Miller at Mediated Reality. You can find him. The piece I'm really interested in is the attempt to remove a phone from one of these criminal children in the sixth grade who happens to have a peek to see if mom emailed them and said, hey, honey, I'll be home at 3. Make sure you let the dog out, right? Yep. I mean, how the fuck is that supposed to work? How is it, like, how are you going to as a teacher? And I said this to my son. He worked in retail for a long time. I'm like, what's the security? Because he says, we got robbed today. And I'm like, what do you mean? He goes, the security guy just stood there because he's not allowed to touch anybody. I'm like, why do they have a security guy? And he's like, I don't even know. He's just, right? So my question to you is that, you know, I tell them all the time, you see someone stealing something, let them go, dude, not your money, right? every teacher that I know that I've spoken with, and I've spoken to several, including Joanna on Learn 16, who's a good friend of mine. And I'm like, what are you going to do? And she's like, absolutely nothing. Yeah. Absolutely nothing. Because you know how much liability there is in removing a communication device that belongs to the family of one of the students, not the student, the family of one of the students, and that is their main mode of communication. She goes, it'll never happen. Like, you're going to see class action lawsuits. So in your estimation, how do you think that's going to go in month three here in Ontario?
So a couple of notes. This has been done before. Okay. New York City schools banned cell phones. And this was the mayor at the time, de Blasio, saying, we're getting rid of phones. So an interesting thing popped up. Outside of schools, you had all of these converted ice cream trucks that now had storage implemented inside, where young people would check their phones at a pay per hour, go inside the school where they were being searched for their devices, and then leave the school to go check their device during the day. These businesses would make money exploiting a law or policy that was put into place to better engage kids. But you saw kids get twitchy waiting to run outside as fast as they could to go get their phone from the lockbox and check it, and then go back to class or choose not to. Right. So when we talk about the idea of the phone being on the person, yes, I understand a regulation that says not out unless declared by a teacher when and how. But it does put another layer where an educator has to have that relationships with students, where students respect them and say, I'm going to put this away because my teacher asked. The same way with my analogy of the coach. The kids do it because they respect coach, because they want to play on the team. Even if they don't like the coach, they still respect them. In that space of talking about the use of it, but then also the holding of it, imagine you're a teacher who takes a device away, and as it's sitting in that bucket that you hold on to these phones for an hour, the kid's phone's going off, making noises, but now they're receiving nudes from their partner who's sitting in another classroom where the phone wasn't taken away. That educator now is being shown on the screen child pornography content that they have to address with their administrator. This adds so many layers to what an educator's job is. And the thing is, this exists currently with certain bans that are in place. So yes, it isn't an effective way. Now, what you did mention earlier, the Faraday bag, I like that idea if this is what a ban needs to be. If you have kids coming into a building, they have to check their phone into a Faraday bag for the entire day, and it's a useless device, then mm-hmm. that's the extreme. But I don't think that's the police state that individuals want to operate in. The reason that you had to do that in meetings is basically controlling information. Or if you go to a comedy show or a concert and the promoter says, this is what the artist wants because they don't want the content out into the public, I can 100% understand that. But then I have to make a choice as a purchaser or as a person with my job. Is this what I want to do? Young people have to go to school. We recognize that. But putting them and their educators into a space of, we're going to spend 10 minutes making sure no one has a device. Mm-hmm. It is an ineffective use of time. It is an ineffective use of a tool that a young person can use for the purpose of education. And at the end of the day, it is a politics conversation, not one where it's just teacher driven, saying, help us improve using this technology in conjunction with curriculum.
So if it's a policy that's already here in Ontario, 2019, which you've said, to your point, and you know that bans don't work, let's grab a couple of your tweets here. You put these out. Love, you got to follow Jesse at Mediated Reality. Why are we seeing this bullshit messaging from Stephen Lecce and the government of Ontario? If all of these things to be true, to your point, do you support or oppose empowering teachers to take away cell phones? 76 respondents reported we like that. But the devil's in the details, right? As you know, you get a little younger, then you look at the demo that was actually, consulted for this study. 18% of respondents had kids in elementary school, 13% had kids in high school. So they largely canvass people with no skin in the cell phone ban game. Jesse.
Yeah, that's also about 1,200 respondents. You've noticed at the bottom too, it says campaign research. When they say we're here for all Ontarians, this is conservative voters who are favoring voting for the Ford government. And so they're making sure that their speaking points align with what they're doing. And again, that's
I love that little source tag at the bottom. Not many people will pay attention to that. You do, or it's like, who put this shit out?
Yeah, but when I say there, what evidence are you citing? Like the University of Oxford, the University of British Columbia. We have these groups who are doing great work identifying how young people use technology. Like, I'll give you an example. The University of British Columbia Okanagan in 2020 identified it doesn't matter if a young person has social media or not. It's how they use it and how it impacts them that we should be assessing. So a kid could have 50 accounts how often are they on it? What content are they subscribing to? Are they a producer or are they a consumer? The individual has to be assessed. And also when it comes to mental health, we have to assess whether or not the young person or the adult had pre-existing mental health that had either been diagnosed or not diagnosed that would be considered a detriment to their use of social media. There are so many gray areas in this space that Lecce's commentary around we've listened to parents and we're here to advocate for good mental health. What about the kid who's going to struggle now because their use of technology actually helps compose them in their day? It adds a regulatory, it allows them to be able to feel measurement to people who are going to help support them.
And that kid's going to be an exception to the rule, right? And then there are going to be other kids who want to be exceptions to the rule.
Then don't make the rule. Don't make the rule. You don't have exceptions to the rule because the rule itself is garbage. And then if you reintroduce it and saying we're adding regulations so that teachers feel more empowered so that they can dictate a little bit more about what they want in their classrooms, that's better than saying phone out of sight, out of mind. Mm. And again, what if a kid is using their phone to measure their diabetes because they have an implantation on their arm, right? I literally saw tweets to that example, people saying, well, why don't they use different medical equipment? You want a kid poking their blood out of their finger, testing in the middle of class, as opposed to an app that shows them in real time when they may be sugar crashing? I mean, don't sit here and give us 20th century values when it comes to 21st century realities. We live in a world where these technologies make life easier. Mm. Don't argue against them. But to that politics point, whether it's NDP, whether it's liberal, whether it's conservative, we are in election cycles and getting people to the polls is what people want to do. And if it's on the backs of parents who want to have a better classroom, that data is flawed and it does not represent what Ontarians believe is the issue with the schools. That's the simple
Data. Yeah, thank you for saying that. I mean, you know, we see bogus research all the time. That is indeed not just bogus research. That's bogus with the intent to influence bullshit research. That's what that is. It's campaign research. It's them curating the narrative they want, to your point. BC, Ontario, I don't have kids. You got young kids. I don't have kids that are going to be in high school next year. You got young kids, right?
I got two ranges. I got teenager and preteen. So.
Okay. Let me put you through your paces, eh? What's good for the goose is good for the gander, Jesse Miller.
Let's do it.
You're okay with it? You're okay with the ban for your kids, or are you going to tell your kids, listen, you are entitled to keep that with you at all times. I'm going to send you with a note because that's what I would do. But what would you do?
So a couple of notes. I don't believe that K-7 education requires the use of personal technology, unless, of course, a young person has something like an app that's helping them with their healthcare.
What if it's a preschool genius? Some kid who's really, really good at using an iPad. He's like six.
Just as a note, that kid probably should be in some structure of learning that is escalating them in a different direction than what we our core competency curriculum. All right.
Okay, fair enough.
But here's the thing. My daughter goes to a school where, yes, the ban is in place in British Columbia, but the school gets to dictate how the technologies get used. And each class is teacher directed. So again, the onus is on the educator, which it should be. The teacher gets to structure their classroom. And so if they encourage, hey, bring out your phone because the camera you have on your device is 1,000 times better than anything the school can provide to you, and use it for the purpose of documenting a project, sharing, producing videos, great. But if my daughter's in a testing environment and she comes home and says, well, I took out my phone, I got in trouble. Again, was your phone supposed to be part of what you were doing at that time? That onus, that responsibility is equal to if she comes home and gets a texting and driving ticket. I'm sorry, you're at the red light. And even though you thought you weren't endangering anybody, the rule applies to you as equally as it does anybody else. So why is it that you thought your behavior shouldn't have a penalty? See, in that space of talking about tech, I encourage conversations in my home like, how was your day at school? But also, what was your day on the internet like today? What did you learn using the internet? What made you laugh? Where did you feel anxiety? Where did you feel happiness based on somebody messaging you who you haven't talked to in a couple of days? Mm. That right there is addressing the whole with my child, not just the thing that I think is a priority, like what did you learn in school today? Because if my daughter can tell me about something she learned on the internet today that's going to spark her interest, excel her education, bring her into a space of being a better, more well-rounded human being, great. Why can't we focus on that as part of their learning every day? Because media consumption is learning. And now if my son or my daughter is learning based on Barstool directive, as we go back to our conversation earlier, I'm going to be sitting down and talking to both my children about consuming media from different sources so they can get a wide range view as opposed to the silo and echo chamber that some of these content are. I can say the same thing about CBC. I can say the same thing about CNN. We have to diversify our media so we can fully learn. And if we don't do that in an effective way, we're going to have young people who grow up in echo chambers that further polarize our society.
Oh man, 100%. The education piece here is super important, and it's incumbent upon parents to be part of that education with their children, but also incumbent upon parents to teach their children about consequences in different capacities, right? You know, there's a tax to pay for everything. You willingly go to school. You willingly submit to those rules of the school, depending on what the situation is. And I tell my children the same time. I mean, that is your responsibility in life is, you know, it's biblical in nature. Give to Caesar what is Caesar's. Operate the best way you can in that capacity. But a lot of parents like to pass that off on their kids, and they don't, you know, which is what we're seeing now. We're seeing the school board in Ontario literally curate a bullshit narrative around what they're trying to do for students. But again, devil's in the details. What you don't know is about a month ago, it was announced they were going to pull $35,000 of funding for each Ontario classroom, which was highly disreputable for the people that are running the province in education. They've stripped education of billions of dollars in this province.
But they did also announce $30 million in vape detectors for schools yesterday, correct?
Yeah. And some of the vape detectors, dude, there's a great story out. You'll love this. They announced they're going to pay. So they wouldn't pay money during the pandemic to get fresh air into schools.
Yeah.
By the way, we refused to do that. Said they would, didn't do it. Said they were going to make schools all air conditioned, didn't do that. But they're going to donate $30 million to schools to get vape detectors that have microphone and listening devices in them, which are already outfitted. Oh, yeah. In certain schools, specifically because they call the boys' bathrooms. But wait, vape Central. They're in boys' bathrooms in some schools. There's a news report. Yeah. They're listening.
Yeah, that's creepy.
Yeah, just a little bit, right? To the point where, you know, and I said this to my son last year. He comes home and he goes, dude, you wouldn't believe what they did for the vape thing at school. I go, what's that? And he goes, the principal at his Catholic high school has a vape patrol, like crossing guard, but for vape people. People are vaping. And they gave a whole bunch of ninth graders these bibs to walk around, take people's names down who were vaping. Within 2 weeks, the program was canceled because some ninth graders got their asses kicked, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it is so ridiculous to see the effort that goes into trying to somehow hustle kids into this environment that only politicians believe kids should be in, right? And that environment is that police state in schools. That's what they're trying to accomplish, if you ask me. It's like, hey, how do we prevent kids from recording bad teachers in different exams? Well, you do that by taking away phones, man. It's super, super simple, right?
And again, we're not going to see kids patted down as they go into classrooms. We have obviously seen kids wanted in certain schools when it comes to searching for weapons and whatnot. And then again, that extreme of my New York example, New York schools, majority of the schools that were deemed to be unsafe had metal detectors. So you had these kids already being searched. But the thing is, the effectiveness of cell phone bans in schools depends on how they're enforced. And the support system itself is parents. I mean, parents have to make a choice about whether or not this device is necessary for their child in the day. But most parents start off their kids on phones with the idea of safety. We know it pivots very heavily into communication. But let's just talk about money for a second. The average Canadian teenager, 16 years of age, sends and receives about 6,500 text messages a month. Now, those text messages are photographs, they're group chats, everything like that. But if we were to apply economics to that, and let's go back to 1999, where a text message in Canada cost 10 cents, if parents got an additional bill for $650 on their kid's phone plan because their kids were sending poop emojis, they'd sit there and curb their kids' behavior and choices in that space because it would be negatively impacting them. Yes, we
although I do appreciate a good poop emoji from my sons when they're in the middle of the school day.
I love the fact that during my day, my daughter is still communicating to me about a lot of things in her life through text because we have healthy dialogue. Yeah. But that doesn't mean that the dialogue stops at night. We do have family dinner time where we extend the conversation. We bring it to spaces where other people weren't included. And I bring it up as part of a dialogue that includes talking about how we've used our technology that during the day. So within that space of economics, I love the fact that for $40 a month, I can support my child's communication with me, various family members, people in their lives. But also as a scale, it's not about also just kind of reviewing, because my daughter has wide open use of her device. It's about talking about how does somebody's communication make you feel? And so when a friend is bombarding them, or the friend is having, you know, their own version of drama and chaos, you know, how can we support individuals who might not even be talking to their own parents about the issues that are going on in their lives? I'm more progressive in that space, not because of my academics and my choice of profession, because that's the kind of parent I want to be. So today, when we talk about, let's say, this Barstool Ryan Whitney post, I'm going to ask my daughter, you know, what does it mean for you as an athlete to see that? She'll say, well, I can understand the sport narrative, but yes, the depiction of this individual or this bear, you know, hurting this other bear, right? That may impact somebody who really doesn't want to have to relive that experience. And we know that trauma can obviously affect people. But if we were to stylize that more like human beings, right? How does, let's say, the coach of the Maple Leafs feel about that? And that's a historical conversation in a space where we don't focus enough on what sex assault in hockey looks like. Right.
Yeah, there's so much context there, and I appreciate that, because, you know, it gets lost. I think everybody counts on nuance, or being able to pull some nuance and justify something with nuance, and I don't think you can. Going back a couple minutes ago, we were talking about the smoke detectors in boys' bathrooms in schools. Here's that article I was referring to: vape detectors with listening abilities installed in some Peel schools. To your point, that's from Global. Yeah, six public high schools.
Eavesdropping in the boys' room?
Yeah, six public high schools is exactly what it is. Peel Region signs have been posted outside washroom doors warning students they might be considered vaping, that they're being monitored with new detectors that can alert the front office. Those detectors, however, play a secondary role monitoring the bathrooms for loud noises, giving principals real-time information that a student might need help. Sure, fella, that's why you're doing that.
To be fair, you know what? We've obviously seen kids hurting in the bathroom when it comes to physical assault. We don't need necessarily recordings of anything happening in the bathroom, but if a bathroom is deemed to be a space where things happen, I mean, I can see the justifications from Peel. And the thing is, I'll give Peel all the credit in the world. I've presented for Peel schools. I have been a keynote for their professional development. I've done parent community events in Peel, and they are traditionally very progressive in addressing very hard-hitting issues in the community, whether it be kids in tech, whether it be about supporting parents, especially parents who English is not the primary language in the community, and how to empower kids using tech better when that gap exists. But to know that our kids are being monitored in a variety of ways, one thing I want to highlight here is that any kid who uses Wi-Fi in a school district needs to know that the school district has the ability to see what happens on that network. Now, Lecce then announced yesterday as well that social media networks are going to be limited on Wi-Fi. What happens with, you know, Peel schools? Like, they have a Twitter account. I remember years ago, young people made a fake Peel schools account so that they could tweet out school closures on snow days.
Yeah, that was my son's school. And then they did the whole thing about rating terrible teachers. Again, my son's school. I'm like, good for you guys.
Well, you're going to ban it. You're going to ban it inside the school as a communication tool, but you're going to rely on it outside of school as a communication tool. What about in school districts in Ontario where, let's say, Indigenous families who traditionally use Facebook Messenger as a primary form of communication? When we talk about how we use these tools, student engagement can be lifted using social media. Student engagement can be something that becomes a focal point and a celebratory piece using social media. The scary part here is that this idea that the negative, the mental health, all the problematic, where we have very small amounts of data, very small. I'll give you an example. 226 studies of well-being of phone users concluded that when you look at all these different kinds of well-being, the net effect size is essentially zero. If you could review 226 studies and say that the net result is zero, that maybe the headline is the speaking point, and maybe a politician's going to benefit more than students or teachers ever will.
Performative at best, stunting your child's ability to learn, find community, or talk to their parents at worst. Jesse Miller, really appreciate you spending some time with us at Mediated Reality. Give Jesse a follow. If you're looking for some advice, a way to navigate this kind of stuff, if you're a school board, if you're a teacher, you're a parent, this is the gentleman who I would encourage everybody to go and visit at Mediated Reality. MediatedReality.com, I believe, is the name of your website, correct?
Yeah.
And you'll fly. I mean, you're on Vancouver Island, which, by the way, totally jelly that you live out there, big time, as someone who's from there. But you'll fly around and you've presented to all kinds of people. This is the information that a lot of people don't get, right? Like, and again, I can be really hard on parents. I take the parenting stuff when it comes to educating my three sons very, very seriously, you know, and when I educate them, you know, their education to what you should be doing online. And I would encourage everybody to have these conversations with their children. How's your day online? How's your day on the internet? Remember that it's forever. Remember that when you put something out there, it can end your life, your relationships, your friendships. So be judicious about what you're doing out there. Know what your values are and make sure you're using those values in every capacity. The duplicity that the online life can create for a child, a young person who is one thing out there and another thing here, also incredibly damaging. You know, there's educational parts of this conversation that I think are important as for parents, not just the children. Like, this is not your kid's problem. This is our issue to go through together to educate people. Media literacy, really big portion of that too. And I know you're bullish on it, but man, oh man, I really appreciate you spending a minute with me this morning, Jesse. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Dean. I appreciate it. You know what? Ontario schools are my favorite places to visit, whether it's Prescott, Kingston, or right in downtown Toronto. Mm-hmm. But the thing of it is that no matter where I am in Canada, north, south, east, west, kids are more connected and more aware of our nation because we have lifted the geographic hindrances, right? Yeah. I've worked in the north where kids show me the video games they're playing against kids in Toronto and the friends that they create and build relationships with in those spaces mm-hmm. because a video game helps them connect. It is absolutely ridiculous to think in any way, shape, or form that this minister is using unhealthy relationships, the need for face-to-face communication as a reason for these kids to be in any form of detriment. They are better than any generation ever became before them. And if we're thinking reverting, classrooms need to change 100%. They need more support, not less. And they definitely don't need vape detectors in the bathroom.
Not ones with listening devices. Cameras are next. Just for the creepy teachers.
That's just gonna make things worse.
Thanks, buddy. Great to see you. Thanks,
appreciate it.
Anytime. Jesse Miller, ladies and gentlemen, Mediated Reality, the name of his company. Educate yourself. Educate yourself by, you know, listening to people like him. He's got some great TED Talks too. You can YouTube, Google those. Smart guy. Hey, this is an everybody problem, right? And when we talk about the performative nature of this, let me remind people I live in Ontario. So these are my people. I put all of my children through school, elementary, junior, senior, universities in Ontario. It's a great place. It really is. And it already has a cell phone ban, has since 2019. The majority of these schools in Ontario have cell phone bans a la carte. So nothing that has been alleged in this ban, which is coming for you and your kids. Nothing has teeth. There's no legal teeth to this. There isn't a teacher that I've talked to who's like really excited to take away your kids' phones. No, they're not. And they won't because they don't want that liability, right? Miss mom's dentist appointment. Kid misses an appointment to go get that seventh toe removed. It's a teacher's fault. That's the problem. The problem is bureaucracy decides for everybody else how they're going to do it because they just want it to be nice and easy for them. They want to be able to point at other people after they steal from your child's education fund. That's what's going on in Ontario. Can't speak to British Columbia. Is it a good idea to keep your phone away from your kid? Yeah, I mean, if he's 8. But then again, you talk to people in Japan, other countries, and they're like, no, as much screen time as humanly possible for those. They have screen time classes. Encourage people in some countries to spend more time on screens, not less. Anyway, be a better parent. Educate your kids. Tell the government to FO. Super simple. Have a great day, everybody. Appreciate the support. Appreciate spending time with us today. Thanks to Jesse for joining us as well. Brought to you by our friends at CanTorque, makers of rugged, hardworking torque wrenches. The worldwide company out of Edmonton, Alberta, Canada, is Canada's leading industrial tool experts, giving you the very best in sales, service, rentals, calibration, maintenance, custom fabrication of industrial torque tools for jobs that nobody can figure out, just them. Any bolting solution in any heavy industry, they have it for you. Manufactured in Canada, designed in Canada for heavy industry worldwide, nuclear, railroad, forestry, steel industry, doesn't matter. They do it all. Tunnel boring machines. These guys are the best in the world. And they're the best in the world because they're proudly Canadian. They got a maple leaf on every single one of their products. So check them out today. Cantork.com. All their products, brand new website, product services, news, podcast. Go to Cantork.com today for more info. Also brought to you by Muse Massage Spa. Check out their new website, MuseMassageSpa.com, and follow them online, Muse on the Mic. That is the name of their Twitter handle. Follow them there. And their Patreon version of their podcast, Totally Uncensored. Highly recommend you subscribe to that. It's only a couple of bucks a month. You can also follow them on YouTube or download their new podcast anywhere you get your podcast. It is officially being undelisted. Yeah, for some reason, people complain about sexual content. These women are educators. They're advocates. They're smart. They're entrepreneurs. They're lovely people, empathetic as well, and they get a little saucy. So download their podcast right now. Muse on the Mic is the name of the podcast. Patreon, YouTube, anywhere you get your fine podcast audio versions as well. You can go to Cryer Media and get it there as well. Muse on the Mic, name of the podcast, Muse Massage Spa, 1290 Finch Avenue West, Toronto, Ontario. And we're brought to you by factcheck.io. If you believe the things you read, then you don't question things enough. And factcheck.io wants to give that agency back to you with disinformation killing software and extensions, a little buddy that goes with you on your information journey so you can assess whether or not you believe what you read, see, feel, hear, or touch. Videos, pictures, spoken word, doesn't matter what it is, any URL. Anything online can be fact-checked for sources, epistemology, and pathology. They are going to break this information one piece of content at a time. Machine learning at its finest, AI incorporated with real-time connections. Go to factcheck.io for more information and to join their beta test team to become a verified fact checker. FACTCHEK.io. Factcheck.io. Do you believe? Have a great day. Thanks to Jesse for being here. Really appreciate it. Don't forget, Lachlan is back 2 weeks from today, I believe. And as always, his friends at Ardent Roofing still slugging it out, getting ready to do their golf tournament. If you're in Edmonton, Alberta, Canada, I will be there on July 5th, joining them for the golf tournament they put on for Stollery Children's Hospital, the Child Life Program. Donate if you can. Get a foursome if you can. July 5th. Really looking forward to joining our friends at Ardent Roof Systems, Owen Corning, Owens Corning Platinum Partner, the number one platinum partner in the entire country. Ardent Roof Systems, Stacy and his group are wonderful individuals. They always tell the truth. They don't do work that doesn't need to be done, and they guarantee everything that they do at ardentroofsystems.com. Get a quote, support their golf tournament, buy a foursome, and sponsor a hole or two if you can. Stollery Child Life Program, helping make sick kids feel like their lives are okay. Been doing it for years. He's doing it again this year. Over $65,000 raised for Child Life Children's Program at Stollery Children's Hospital in Edmonton. Let's continue to support that again. ArdentRoofSystems.com. Donate, buy a foursome, sponsor a hole. That'd be nice. Have a great day, everybody. See you tomorrow on this very program. Rod Black reliving his time with Bob Cole. Yeah, Rod Black, my friend. Legendary announcer. Nicest guy in the world. Never had a bad day in his life. Rod Black tomorrow. Have a great day. We'll see you then. Bye.
Softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.